Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. Hi, everyone. This is Liz Bothwell from Waste 360, and I'm with Megan Knowlton, Director of Sustainability for Optoro. Welcome, Megan, and
Hi.
Thanks for being on the show.
Hi, Liz. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I can't wait to hear your story, and we usually start at the beginning on this podcast. So could you please tell me about your background and your journey to the world of sustainability?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, back in the day, I started with an interest in nature, right? And in how we as people interact with the environment and with natural systems. And I was actually a big water girl and loved studying rivers and streams and how we as people access water resources and impact those resources through our own activities and through climate change. And over time, I started realizing, wow, the way that we interact with resources, the field of study that I can use to interact with those topics every day could be sustainability. And so while I was in grad school at the Nicholas School of the Environment at Duke, I started taking more classes and working in kind of the sustainability arena. And I ended up from there in the Coca-Cola bottling system, partly because of my passion at the time for water, and partly because I loved the idea of being able to influence how business works with the resources that make up products and with operations and how, you know, businesses interact with their customers as well in creating change for the planet and doing better for the planet. And so I was there for a while within the Coca-Cola system, really managing all kinds of programs having to do with water and waste and recycling and carbon emissions and energy usage. And over time, you know, I thought, okay, it would be really interesting to get closer to kind of the whole retail system and focus on more products, more types of products. So I stumbled across this company that I'm at now called Optoro. We make returns technology, and that sounded super different, kind of niche to me. And so I ended up where I am now. I focus less on water itself now and more on waste, in particular on entire product waste and on durable goods waste. So it's been different. And it's been a really interesting field for me and, you know, has opened a lot of doors and focuses that I had no idea existed before or had a chance to dive into before.
Oh, that's a great background. I love hearing that and how you found Optoro. And I know that you recently noted that every year, 5.8 billion pounds of retail returns and excess in inventory end up in the landfills. And that's such a staggering number. So, Megan, how do you think retailers can be more circular based on your experience with Optoro and previously Coca-Cola?
Yeah, that's a great question, Liz. So I think that's a great question partly because we included, you know, sustainability and circularity in the same sentence. And they're not always necessarily, they don't always necessarily go hand in hand, but I love what I get to work on because it's reducing product waste from landfill. And keeping those products in the reuse system. So both kind of hitting sustainability targets of waste reduction and in keeping products in use. So, you know, what I focus on and what I aim for retailers and brands to keep in mind is how can we keep both products and packaging in a reuse system for as long as possible and making it to the next consumer as long as possible. So in the circular economy, there are a few key places where brands can focus. So first, it's around design and sourcing materials that, you know, make a product more durable and, you know, similarly make the packaging around it and even the shipping packaging more durable and more reusable as well. Luckily, there are so many good service providers and experts and consultants out there who share many overlapping expertises in keeping materials and products and packaging in the retail ecosystem for as long as possible. From there, after that design phase, you also want to think about the use phase, the selling and the use, and how consumers interact with the product. So there are lots of different ways that retailers can do this, but the area I'm so fascinated by is in using technology to keep products in use. One example is my company. We make returns technology that helps retailers along the entire life cycle of a product's return journey. So first it starts with returns initiation in an online returns portal that we make or that we offer with a partner. Then there's kind of the core of our work, which is in returns processing and dispositioning, which are, kind of big words, but it basically means that we make technology that allows our clients to bring back returns and then make the best decision for where the next best home is for that product. So our technology uses AI and data science to determine where that product should go to next. Should it be resold on a variety of different marketplaces? Should it be listed right back to stock for that retailer? Should it be donated or recycled? And so on down the line. And then, the kind of next core piece of what we do is in that resale or re-commerce area. So we integrate into a number of resale marketplaces, and we also have our own resale marketplace that sells to a number of mom-and-pop resellers, and that's called bulk.com. So, the offerings that we create and that others in our area create are super helpful for building reuse at scale, not just, these one-off resale pilots that we're seeing all over the place, but really being able to build out systems where retailers and brands can make sure that they are reusing, either donating or reselling as much as of their excess inventory and returned inventory as possible. Another area that I think is a really great place for companies to be thinking about is in the digitization area. So really tagging your products at their point of manufacturing with a digital ID, whether that's a QR code or an RFID tag. There are a variety of different solutions in the market right now where companies are testing putting IDs on their products and then using that ID to generate data on where the product goes to, how it's used, how consumers are interacting with it, and where they part ways with the product. Whether, if it's single-use goods, that might be where they're recycling the product, and what, service provider does it go to. Or if it's a more durable product, it might be when and where they return it or send it back to the manufacturer as part of a take-back program, or where they're disposing of it. So a few really great places, I think, for companies to be focusing or to be, focusing their efforts right now in the area of circular economy.
Oh, that's great advice, and I love how you covered everything there, because I think there's an opportunity for everyone. It's not, okay, it's only this one area. It's technology where you are saying, hey, there's a whole secondhand market here that we can exploit, and that will also help keep this out of landfills. I love that you're focused on all of that.
Yes, and I think too, I focus so much on the products, right? On so everything from home furnishings to apparel to everything in between. But there's so much focus in the same, parallel to what I'm doing on packaging as well. And there are so many great different programs out there that are piloting opportunities for keeping packaging in use. So I love, like my aluminum can that has my shampoo in it that I know was put on by TerraCycle through their Loop program. And so I'm really interested in that kind of program as well, but that's not specifically what I do in my job.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. And then I know you mentioned a little bit about the technology behind UpToro. Now, how are the consumers part of this? Are you working directly with them, or is it mostly done through retailers to consumers?
Yeah, so we work primarily B2B, right? So our clients, our retailers and brands. However, we're finding more and more that in order to make the most sustainable returns systems, we have to engage with the consumer, of course. And you know, there are a few key ways that we do that. I mentioned earlier that we have a returns portal that we offer with a partner called Returnly. And so, you know, when a consumer of a brand or retailer goes online to make a return, they go to a portal where they initiate their return, right? And so on there, you know, they can tell the retailer why they're making the return. And that can generate such useful data on products' durability, on their size and fit guides, for example, if it's apparel, and just really giving retailers information about, is this a good product? Is it described well? Is there something off about our description or our photos? Is there something that we need to reassess in the design phase? And then, you know, that also helps retailers as well, once they get data from the returns portal, to know about what inventory they have for restocking and that are currently existing in their supply chains as well. So that's one place where we engage with the consumer. And the other main place we engage with the consumer, which I am so excited about, is a packageless returns program that we recently launched with Staples, and we offer these drop-offs for different brands to drop off their returns, or for customers of these brands to drop off their returns at Staples stores. And then, what's great about this program is that we consolidate the returns for different brands behind the counter at Staples in, you know, one box. So they're all going together in one box without any packaging around them. And then from there, we're able to send that kind of consolidated returns package to a returns hub, or like a distribution center. And then from there, those products can either go back to their respective brands, or they can get, you know, listed back online or sold on secondary marketplaces or what have you directly from that hub. And so that is a great place where we're kind of combining convenience for the customer in providing a variety of returns options. So, you know, if it's easier for a customer to just drop it off without the original packaging around it at a Staples, then that's great. That's a win. And then we can also, you know, save a little bit on carbon emissions and on cardboard by bringing all of these products from different brands together into one consolidated box behind the Staples counter, and then send it back together. So saving on the carbon, saving on the cardboard, making the consumer have a, you know, hopefully positive returns experience, which means they're gonna, you know, be happier to shop with that brand in the future and that kind of thing. So great place where we're able to kind of combine all of those values together and really engage with the consumer. Something I'm excited about too is being able to give consumers information about the sustainability behind their returns decisions. You know, really trying to get the information out there to people who are shopping, which is myself as well, right? I'm a consumer, to remind ourselves that just because you return something doesn't necessarily mean that it's getting reused. So that's an area where I'm really excited about this type of program, because I like to hope that this shows consumers, hey, if the brand or retailer you're working with is engaging in this type of program, it's likely that they are trying to be more responsible about getting products back to themselves as quickly as possible, so they can resell them as quickly as possible or donate them, or, you know, whatever disposition works best for that product.
Yes, definitely. And I think you're onto something, because it really seems that the consumer is demanding that now, and a lot of companies are being born out of that and respecting that. So that's great.
Yes, that's such a great point, that the kind of circular retail area is really becoming an area of growth. I know that Ellen MacArthur Foundation, as well as I believe there was a book from McKinsey last year. You know, these types of companies are coming out with all kinds of good data about the opportunity involved in the circular economy, and in particular, leaning into secondhand or open box sales and in developing new business models around the circular economy. So, you know, one company I love is Rent the Runway. They of course, kind of really are the leader in the apparel rental space. And you know, I'm a member with them and have been using them for a while and love being able to have new clothes and then send them back and, you know, have them dry cleaned for me and all of the convenience that comes with that. But then also knowing that instead of buying new clothes, I'm able to keep those, you know, high-end durable clothes in use for as long as possible, and, you know, let somebody else enjoy them as well. So, you know, that's an example of a business model that is really rooted in the circular economy in creating shared assets, as opposed to, you know, individual, where, you know, I might not get as much use out of something unless I were sharing it with others.
That makes sense. And that you talking about Rental Runway was a great example. And I know you have partnerships with IKEA and UPS and others as well. And that Staples example was great. Is there anything else happening that you want to share with some of those other programs and how you're working together?
Sure. Yeah. So one thing that I get to do in my day-to-day life is creating what I call alternate disposition channels for our client retailers. So you're right that we work with IKEA, we work with American Eagle, Best Buy, a number of different brands and retailers, and including some of the largest in the U.S. And one of the things that I get to help our clients with specifically is on standing up donation and recycling channels. So, you know, when a brand or retailer comes to us, they might say, hey, we've got all this inventory, we're doing our best to resell it, or, you know, we're liquidating it, or some amount is maybe going to dispose, and we think that maybe we can try to divert some of that from the landfill. Can you help us? And from there, we'll say, yeah, totally. You know, we have experts in-house who can help you with optimizing your resale channels and adding new resale channels and, you know, kind of creating your whole strategy for resale. And then it'll be my job, Megan's job, to come in and help stand up any donation programs or recycling programs that they might need to supplement those resale or, you know, listing back to stock channels as well. So I get to kind of be that bridge between our clients and donation partners or charities to figure out where products should go, what kind of products, how often do they go, you know, the whole range of the project management there. And so that can be really fun for me. It kind of puts me in almost a consultant role, which, you know, is not my background. I'm not originally a consultant by trade. But it ends up being really fun because I get to work at all ends of those kinds of programs. So one great example is with IKEA in the U.S. We have been working on standing up a donation program for them over the last, over a year now. And, you know, they're live in some of their U.S. stores with this automatic donation program. So, you know, I'd like to clarify, IKEA does donate a lot of their inventory, but it wasn't automated yet. And so it could be, you know, subject to whether it's just human error or it's just people deciding whether something should get donated. And that takes a lot of time and effort and energy. So we used our technology in their stores to determine automatically if something that got returned should just go straight to donation. And that saves them time, saves them some of that energy and space, and then gets products into the hands of people who will reuse them as soon as possible. And so I love those kinds of programs because I get to really see the difference that I'm doing in my job and get to work with a variety of different stakeholders on those projects as well. So, you know, those kinds of programs are growing. I think more and more retailers, too, are seeing you know, the value in community giving, in social impact, as well as for some types of donation programs, there can also be tax benefits with donations as well.
That's great. And what a way to keep everything so fresh for you. You get to see it from start to finish. That's a very cool project.
Yeah, thank you. I know it's kind of a fun, almost niche area. I feel like I've said that before, that my job feels quite niche to me. I bet listeners of your podcast are like, no, I've seen this kind of job before. You know, it's a reverse logistics job. But it's such a fun and interesting place. And being at a company like Optoro, where we're a tech company, and you know, we have to remain agile and we have to be able to pivot on certain projects. Or on our products, it means that, you know, no 2 days are the same.
Oh, I bet. And then speaking of having to pivot, did COVID impact your role or Optoro and the work they're doing?
Oh, that is such a great question, Liz. Yes, COVID certainly impacted our industry, my role, our company, and you know, all of our clients, all of the major retailers and brands, and of course the small ones as well. So okay, first things first, it's early March 2020. You know, I wake up one morning and I look at, I guess, my email, or maybe it was Slack or something, and there were all of these alerts going on saying that Optoro's main warehouse, where we process a bunch of returns for our clients, had been hit by a tornado. And I was like, oh my God, what? And so it's, you know, this is very early March 2020. And then, you know, within a couple of days, I'm flying out to the Nashville, Tennessee area, which is where our warehouse was. We had, within 6 days, found a new space so that the old space was destroyed. So within 6 days, our company had found a new space, set up that new space, and was getting it up and running for our clients so that, you know, they wouldn't miss a beat in processing returns for their customers, right? Because customers are wanting their refunds and want to purchase new products. So they're like, you know, we can't stay down long, otherwise people won't get their refunds. So within 6 days, we stand up a new facility, and I fly out there to kind of help just wherever I can. Me and a couple other people were like, I'm going to come make coffee for you and sweep the floors, like whatever you need. I'm here. I'm not the expert on operations, but I can be here. And so we go out there, and I get on the plane to go to Nashville, and I have to wear a mask. And I'm like, oh, this is new. I didn't have a mask before. I had to get a mask to get on the plane, you know? And I'm like, this is kind of funny. And then we get there, and you have to have hand sanitizer, and all of the stores are out of hand sanitizer. And I'm like, well, this is complicated. And you know, and on and on, and we keep going around, and some places require masks and others don't. And after I come back to where I live in Washington, D.C., from Nashville, it's you know, crazy. I get back to Washington, D.C., and I can't go into the office. They say, you know, we're going to test closing down the office because of COVID. And then I think like a day later, after I get back from Nashville, it's March 13th, 2020, and everything shut down. And so that was kind of a wild time for Optoro, certainly, for our clients, certainly. Once everything shut down, including, you know, all of the supply chain blockages that happened right around that time, we had clients come in to us saying, we have tons of truckloads of inventory sitting out, you know, on the road or outside of warehouses because we don't have them staffed and we can't get people to unload these truckloads, and you know, because for people's safety. So we have all this inventory that's just sitting in trucks or in stores that are closed or in warehouses that are closed, and we can't move any of it. So within a few months, where you know, we were frantically working with our clients to help them try to move this inventory, use our technology to automate it, resell inventory that, you know, was now out of season because, you know, spring inventory was trying to go in stock and then everything shut down. So by early summer, we're like reselling all of this, since a lot of it was out of season. And, you know, we're doing our best to kind of keep up with that. And then, you know, right around that time too, the rise of digital just skyrocketed. So everybody's shopping online, and demand for products is high, and our brands and retailers are reaching out to us saying, "Oh my gosh, I need digital solutions. I need to make my solutions better, and we need to do it now." So, it was really a wild time, both kind of on the supply chain side of what we do at our company and on the digital side of what we do, creating these returns platforms and providing customers with easy, safe, contactless ways to get returns to retailers. So, a lot happens there for Optoro, for our company personally, that tornado impact really, really had a big impact on us as well. From there, we've been more remote, of course, over the last couple of years. I used the word agile earlier. I think it really showed how adaptable our company can be when we come together. And it's been interesting, it's luckily, I'd say in the last year, with that rise of digital and with the rising interest in circular economy solutions among consumers, so anything from rentals to secondhand shopping, product as a service, everything like that, our work has only been increasing. So it's been a really interesting space. It hasn't slowed us down at all. It's been all hands on deck for a while. So, I feel blessed to have continued having a job and have a company that stayed around and that didn't have to do, a mass layoff. I'm excited that retailers and brands are here during the continued pandemic and are saying now more than ever, we need sustainability, we need resiliency, and we want to provide more responsible options for our customers.
Definitely. I think the pandemic definitely shined a light on that for sure.
Yes, I think so. And of course, early in the pandemic, there was also this, the major upheaval in the US around racial injustice. And, around that time, I'd say is when the retail ecosystems, and that's where I work within, we saw retailers and brands taking stands on social justice issues. And I think around that time, this kind of awakening sense of justice and seeking responsible governance from companies, that really took more hold, I think, in the average person's brain space, if I can say that. I think the pandemic has made many of us experts in supply chains, many of us experts in public health, and, many of us better educated in racial injustice issues. And so, when we're shopping with a company or when we're engaging with a company of any kind, we want to see that they're doing the right thing. And it's great to see that that's only gotten stronger in the last, almost 2 years.
I agree. And then Megan, I know you were really instrumental in an impact report that you published. Could you dig into that a little bit more, the findings and what came out of that?
Oh yeah, thanks, Liz. So yes, part of my job at Optoro is kind of project managing our annual impact report. And so last year's report was a little bit different. Normally we rely on a lot of photos and we talk about volunteering in our communities. And while we did do that in 2020, it was to a lesser degree. But luckily, I was able to still focus on, the data and the impact of COVID and other trends in 2020 on the returns ecosystem and on retail in general. So the findings of last year's impact report were so interesting. We found that in 2020, as you mentioned earlier, returns resulted in 5.8 billion pounds of waste to landfill just in that year. And what's interesting about that is that that was up from about 5 billion pounds in the year previous. And that 5 billion had stayed pretty stable for a number of years. So that jump up from 5 to 5.8 was interesting. And we suspect that it partly has to do with, the rise of digital and on supply chain, trying to keep up with that digital shopping. And then The returns in the U.S. last year also resulted in about 16 million metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions, which was up as well from about 15 million. So a really interesting year. I don't love to see the impact of returns go up, but it doesn't really surprise me, especially with e-commerce and online shopping increasing. What's interesting is, that waste metric, 5.8 billion pounds, that's about the same weight as 6,400 fully loaded Boeing 747s. So, huge airplanes that are fully loaded with fuel and with passengers and cargo, 6,400 of them. And, as we're looking at that as well, we were also seeing that that online returns or e-commerce returns tended to create more waste further down the supply chain than brick and mortar or the traditional returns. We found from our data that that online shopping creates about 14% more waste from returns than brick and mortar does. And, there are a few reasons for that, and we found that likely it has to do with that downstream supply chain effect. So when returns come back to the warehouse, it takes a lot of time to open them and process them. From in store, somebody at the counter is looking at it, putting it in a box, and you might be able to either put it back to stock at the store, or maybe it can go to donation or something like that, or to a markdown at the store. But for e-com returns, they all go back to a warehouse. They're usually individually packaged. Somebody has to stand there and open each and every box and inspect each and every product and condition it and figure out where it can go from there. And that's super time consuming. So, that can create a lot of waste because it might just be quicker to liquidate everything or to send some things to export or some things to donation. And so from there, we believe that can really create more of the waste in the downstream kind of supply chain from returns in e-com. What's another key important area of our impact reporting is trying to get a sense of how Optoro's programs helped our clients in the last year. And so we have these annual impact models that we make for each of our clients. And so we're able to see, okay, with every client in the last year, we helped them reduce the waste to landfill by this amount, and we helped them reduce carbon from transportation by this amount as well. And so that's something that I'm actually doing right now for this current year. So, stay tuned in early 2022 for 2021. But one thing that I'm really proud of is that last year we helped our clients, even during the pandemic, keep 96% of their returned inventory out of landfills. So 96% of their inventory was going to a resale channel of some kind or a donation channel.
It's amazing how much data you collected in there.
Yeah, thank you. We do a lot of work around data, both in our modeling, and with our clients. I think so much of our platform is really based on generating data, on collecting data, for our clients. And it's kind of one of the key values of using technology in your returns or your excess inventory strategy, is that if you can have data on where your products are and where they're coming from and where they're going, you can better optimize how you're routing them and how you are dispositioning them and what price you might resell them at or what price you might list them at and kind of on and on down the line. So, the more data, the more opportunity you have for really optimizing what your entire supply chain looks like. And I think the nice part about my job is that I get to pair our environmental impact with our financial impact and with our operational savings as well. For anybody who works in the sustainability or circular economy space, there's huge value in being able to tie sustainability impact with financial outcomes, right? You want to be able to tie positive ROI to what you do. And my job, you know, it can be pretty clear right there, front and center, when we're working with a client and, hey, we helped them resell X percent more than they did last year without us. And because of that, you know, we diverted inventory from landfill and we helped them generate more money from their returns than they used to. So win-win across the board. And, you know, and when there's a customer benefit there as well, like the customer is engaging with the retailer more because they had a positive returns experience, then, you know, you see even more of a win on top.
Absolutely. So I know you talked a little bit about what you're seeing and how you're adapting to that. And we spoke a little bit about trends, but is there anything else that you're looking forward to or Optoro? What's next? And what are you paying attention to?
Yeah, great question. So I do think there's such a focus right now on circular models, particularly in fashion and apparel. So I'm spending a good amount of time trying to focus on the fashion and apparel space in terms of thought leadership and what the impacts of the fashion industry are on the environment. I'm really enjoying kind of digging into that space. There's a lot of reporting coming out on it, and you know, the resale companies like ThredUp or The RealReal have really interesting reports they've come out with on, you know, secondhand and how that's been rising. So that's kind of a trend that we're watching, as well as seeing customers really engage with so much. You know, I think for the average customer, myself included, a key way of how people you know, present ourselves to the world and show off our personality are through our clothing choices. And so, you know, apparel and the fashion space are really a great place to lean into sustainability and circular economy offerings and messaging in an authentic way, of course, because, you know, customers are really demanding it. I think another key place to watch as well is keeping an eye on regulation and on advocacy action. This year, there's been a lot around, you know, climate action and carbon emissions goals being set in the last year. You know, we've seen the climate conference, COP26. We've seen, you know, the infrastructure bill in the U.S. We've seen, you know, the IPCC or the what is it, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change came out with a new report this year on climate. And so I think just all of these trends kind of together are showing us that climate is front and center for business and for governments. So keeping an eye on regulation, on extended producer responsibility laws in the US in particular is going to be interesting just to see where companies might in the future or even currently are required to, you know, be responsible for their packaging or for their products after the use phase with customers. So that's going to be a place where, you know, there will be change and it'll be coming for the retail industry, I believe. It might not be next year, but it'll be, you know, over time. And then finally, yeah, again, I think bringing up the digitization aspect and kind of blockchain within retail, that's definitely a growing area and should be a really great opportunity for more companies, you know, big brands and small service providers alike to get smarter with how we're managing products in the entire supply chain.
Love that. What great focus is, and I can't wait to hear more about it. So where else can listeners learn more and really follow you and Optoro?
Yeah, I'd love to, you know, chat with any listener who ever wants to kind of dig into this more or get more info or data. You can always check us out at optoro.com, Optoro. We have a blog on there and our impact reports are there. And, you know, you can always reach out to us through the website as well. Of course, I'm on LinkedIn, again, Megan Knowlton, so you're welcome to reach out on there. And yeah, stay tuned for, you know, the latest and greatest news reports out there on what's coming up and what kind of programs we're doing with our clients. And, you know, we're always looking to share good ideas and get involved more and get smarter about the ways that we're creating change in retail and in how we're measuring and communicating it too.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Megan, this has been awesome. I'm so happy you shared all of this with us, and we look forward to following you and seeing what else you guys accomplish and how we divert more. I love this story. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This has been super great. We appreciate your engaging with us and including us on this podcast, Liz. It's really exciting, and I'm glad to have Nothing Wasted in my podcast queue now.
Oh, good. Well, we're thrilled to be there. Let us know if you can think of any other topics you want to see covered because you have such an interesting background and perspective. So I'd be completely open to that.
Oh, that sounds so fun. Okay, great. Well, I'll just come on as a producer real quick and give you some pointers.
It.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Liz.
You too, and have a great day and enjoy your new apartment, especially for the
Oh,
holidays.
thank you so much. Thank you so much. I gotta go hang up some twinkle lights and,
Yes.
burn a yummy cookie scented candle.
I love that. Do it. Well, thanks, Megan.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. It would mean the world if you would take a moment to rate or review this podcast. And if you share it with us on one of our social networks, we are giving out some fun, nothing wasted podcast swag. So just tag us and see what you get. Thanks so much.